Welcome back to Marvel Good Yay, the spinoff of the Geek Easy podcast, where we're going back to discuss all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films. I am Pixel Dan,
Jonathan Leonard,
and Jerry McCaffrey.
And today, we're going to be jumping into the discussion on Captain America Civil War. But before we do that, we're actually going to go ahead and rank all of the MCU movies so far, since we just recently wrapped up phase two and we're getting ready to start phase three with this movie. Yep. So now we have to go back and rank them all of them, phase one and two.
Yep. And if you've been listening to the show, you know at the end of the Ant-Man episode is when we realized we hadn't done this yet. So we're going to go ahead and kick off Civil War by going through our ranking. So who wants to start?
Oh, I don't care. You want me to go?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Are we going bottom to top or top to bottom?
Ooh, but let's go bottom to top.
Okay, so 12 movies so far. Phase 1 and 2. 12 on my list is Iron Man 2. 11 on my list is Thor the Dark World. I feel like those two could be interchangeable almost, but they're definitely the bottom rung for me. I stuck Ant-Man at 10. I have Incredible Hulk at number 9. Iron Man 3 at number 8. Age of Ultron is at number 7. Thor is at 6. Iron Man 1 is at 5. And this is where things really start to get complicated. Captain America is a real solid number 4. Guardians of the Galaxy is my number 3. Avengers is my number 2. And my number 1 is Winter Soldier.
Nice.
So those are my rankings.
Oh. And we're on 20 now after Captain Marvel? Is that right?
Oh my gosh.
Phase 3 is big.
Phase 3 is big.
Yeah.
Phases are arbitrary.
Phases are a construct.
Phases are a construct. So I started, my number 12 is Dark World. My number 11 is Iron Man 2.
I'm a little shocked right now.
Yeah.
You hate Iron Man 2.
I do hate Iron Man 2. So actually what bumped it is that I took enough enjoyment of disliking Iron Man 2 that I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed watching Thor Dark World. Thor Dark World was just boring.
Yeah, at least so bland, I get it.
Yeah, at least Iron Man 2 was bad enough that I had feelings about it. Yeah. Thor Dark World, I just, whatever.
Yep.
Number 10 for me is Ant-Man.
Okay, yep.
Number 9, Hulk. Number 8, Ultron. Number 7, Iron Man.
Ooh.
Low for me. Number 6 is Thor. Number 5, Iron Man 3. I love Iron Man 3.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Number 4, Captain America.
Cool. Same spot as me.
Number 3, Winter Soldier.
Oh.
Number 2, Guardians.
Okay.
And I really... Those are... Honestly, those are about the only two I would have a hard time... That could probably swap pretty easily. But as much as I love Winter Soldier, there's no moment where I get that swell of feeling like I get when the Guardians are all holding the Infinity Stone together.
Okay, yeah.
You know, there's no, you know, and I'm just like, yeah. Hold on, give me your hand.
Yeah,
take my hand. I'm with you. You know, there's no moment like that for me in Captain America and Winter Soldier. Yeah. Love that movie. Not, you know, not that it doesn't have moments that get me in the feels.
Right.
But there's no moment like that where I'm ready to crawl in my TV and help the team.
Right. Right. Yeah. Awesome.
Which is the main reason why Avengers takes number one.
Cool.
Because man, that same thing when Cap starts when they're in the circle and Cap starts calling out orders. I mean, I'm right there. Yeah. What do you want me to do? Where am I at, Cap? Yeah. You want me on the street here with you, or should I help Hulk? Like, I'm in.
Okay, so I'm up next. I like the similarity in our lists.
Yeah.
Which I mean, we're 12 in, so there's going to be some overlap. But I think we all start with the bottom two.
Yep.
I did do Iron Man 2 at 12, and Thor: The Dark World above. I will say I think the standouts for both of those movies to me would be on the villain side. the Dark Elves were kind of lame, but Loki's still running around that movie.
Yeah.
And that nudged it just a little bit, because I liked Whiplash a lot, and I love Sam Rockwell, but man, it's Loki.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's where the credit goes. I think we all had Ant-Man at 9. or 10, I guess it would be, yeah.
Yep.
Which I think, as much as I like Ant-Man, I think that says a lot about your universe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
right.
know,
yeah,
totally. When you're 12 in and that's the 10th best. I had Thor coming next.
Oh.
I had Incredible Hulk after that. I really, this is a fluid list for me.
Yeah.
I don't know how similar it is to our phase one rankings, because it's all kind of in the moment. I feel like Hulk is falling down mine, because I love Hulk.
Yeah.
I really like the Edward Norton Hulk. But the farther you get in, the more it starts to feel separated from the universe,
totally.
And it just kind of... That brings it down, you know. So I am personally very interested to see where I'll rank it after phase three. Next I had Iron Man and then Iron Man 3, and that's the one where I could we've all got that point in our list where it's really interchangeable, and that's mine there. I really like both of those movies. I cannot actually decide which one I like more. I'm giving Iron Man 3 the nudge right now, maybe because it's fresher, maybe because it's better. I don't know. But I really dig both those movies, but I think they're of a very similar, you know,
quality right there.
Iron Man gets a little bit of a nudge because it introduced everything to us, but Iron Man 3 is just really solidly entertaining.
Yep.
Then I got Age of Ultron next. I think it got just a general bump for being an Avengers movie, you know,
okay.
I think, because on any given day, I might like Thor more than this one, you know, but when you actually sit down and watch it, I think... Since it is so fresh in my mind, I think it's one that it always plays better than I remember it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So I
bumped it up there, which leads me into my number four, which is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Again, like we talked about, just such a wonderfully done movie. The way you can take a band of people no one's ever heard of and make a movie that isn't Avengers level, but it's in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
You know,
next is First Avenger for me.
Mm.
As much as Hulk feels more detached, First Avenger feels more important, I think, as we go along.
Yeah,
I get
that.
You know?
Totally.
And then the top two, which I think are, well, I guess you had Guardians at two, so our top three are getting up there, but I went with Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
I really think it might be the best movie they've done. That's not the same as favorite.
Yep.
And also, even to say best movie is such a weirdly subjective thing, because they are different styles of movie.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both big superhero epics, but my number one, obviously, is Avengers.
Yeah.
Being the one that's left. Captain America's got that espionage thing. It's such a very well-made movie. It runs on all cylinders. It hits all levels. It goes into depths on things that the Avengers had no time or need to go into on, that I think could give it that edge as far as if you were just really trying to break down the filmmaking process.
Yeah.
But it does not have the geek out that the Avengers has. And again, as far as just a cinematic moment goes, the fact that they made all of those movies, and then they brought them all together, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work because we wanted it to work, so we let some obvious flaws go. It worked because it's darn near perfect.
Yeah.
So that's my number one as of now.
Awesome. We have the same four movies in our top four.
Yeah.
So that's pretty that's pretty awesome.
And very the same cool. two in our bottom t-
yeah,
two.
Yeah, the same two in our bottom two. How about that? Same train of thought on these.
Actually,
movies,
the same in our bottom three.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Poor Ant-Man.
Ant-Man number 10 there.
I'd like to point out Ant-Man's way better than Thor 2.
So there's like a big jump actually between 11 and 10 there. Awesome. All right. Well, let's get into the discussion on Civil War. You want to start us off, John, with some stats on the movie release?
I got to get rid of my list. Okay. So... Civil War is working on a budget of $250
million, so about double what Ant-Man was.
Oh, wow.
I feel like they gave us more than double the spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
Yeah. Got a domestic haul of $408 million, foreign income of $745 million, for a grand total of $1.15 billion at the box office. So, continuing that train of successes, getting us back into the billion-dollar mark.
I believe this was the biggest of the Captain America movies overall, because it plays...
Like an Avengers movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the big summer start off that year. Had a lot of, you know, kicking off Phase 3. So you're not only starting the summer, you're starting this whole new realm. You know, people don't know exactly what's coming with Infinity War, but they know something big's coming.
Yep.
You've got the breakdown of the Avengers. You've got Cap versus Iron Man. Steve versus Tony, more importantly. They did a great job marketing all that stuff. I find it delightful that I think this is this is probably the third best Captain America movie in my mind.
Yeah.
It's probably the second best Avengers movie.
Yeah.
And it might be the very best Ant-Man movie.
Amazing. Also, don't forget that with all the buildup for this movie, there was the big Spider-Man reveal, too.
Yes.
So that had that going for it, because one of the final trailers leading into this movie was Spider-Man swinging in and stealing the shield from Captain America.
The Underoos moment.
Yeah. So that had that going for
it, too. And that was, we talked about that when we did the Age of Ultron episode also. Like, that deal was done right at the end of Age of Ultron, so there was that brief... you know, thought of maybe shoehorning Spider-Man into that didn't work out. But now here's where we do finally get it.
Yep.
So this is based on a big comic story that they basically abridged and made fit within the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the whole Civil War in the comic books was based around what in the books they called the Superhero Registration Act. And essentially this whole thing comes about... I believe I'm trying to remember exactly who it was that did it, but there was an incident
in the comics. It was the New Warriors, I think.
Yeah, because it was caused by mutants, right?
Were they mutants? I think Speedball is the one who blew up the school.
Yes, so the school blew up. I remember that. Oh, the New Warriors. You're right. Here it is. Yeah. The New Warriors: Night Thrasher, Namorita, Speedball, and Microbe battle a group of villains. Nitro explodes, killing more than 600 people. Yeah. The rest of the superheroes appear in Stamford to search for survivors. So yes, they're basically superheroes cause a massive explosion, lots of deaths.
And so, it was a school, wasn't it? Because I think it was kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. People get weird when you blow up schools.
Oh, so. Because see, inactive members of the New Warriors are branded as baby killers. So that was a big thing. So basically, this is what happens. It's like the Superhero Registration Act becomes a thing where anybody with superpowers needs to be registered. This is what starts the struggle, because Tony Stark becomes basically the leader of the people who are siding with the Registration Act. And Captain America becomes the leader of the group who are against the Superhero Registration Act, which is what starts our Civil War in the comics. So it's kind of almost the same sort of conflict that they were able to perfectly adapt into the movies here. Instead of the Superhero Registration Act, it's the Sokovia Accords.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's because of all of the destruction that's been caused over the course of all of these movies, with the big incident in Sokovia kind of being the catalyst for, like, everything. But there's even that moment here at the beginning of the movie where they're chasing down Crossbones.
Yeah.
And in an attempt to try to stop him, Scarlet Witch is unable to harness her powers enough, and she blows up that building.
Yeah.
And levels that building.
I don't think I had many notes for this, but the one that really jumped out at me from the beginning, and it's sort of a trend through this movie, is there's a lot of weird, I don't want to say false blame, but at least weird blame in this movie, because the Sokovia Accords come about because there's a lot of this happening. It's not that one incident. But the inciting incident at that moment is what happens with Scarlet Witch there. And every time I watch the movie, I feel like maybe I'm not understanding that scene properly, because Crossbones is about to blow himself up. She contains the blast for long enough to lift him up into the air, and he ends up blowing a big part of that building up. But, like, they were in the middle of a crowded street. Like, if she hadn't been there, he was going to blow up a bunch of people one way or the other.
Yeah.
So I feel like she could have maybe thrown him a different direction and got him into the air, but... It's not like her not doing anything was going to save people.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
So that's kind of one of my notes. I have a lot of thoughts on that, but
that's what we're here for.
When they're discussing, when General Thunderbolt Ross shows up and he's discussing, or is he a senator now? I don't know. When he shows up,
Secretary of State.
When Secretary of State Ross shows up and he's kind of laying out, it's time for the Accords, people. the ones he throws out there are New York, D.C., and Sokovia.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, you know, it doesn't put us, from an audience perspective, it does not put us on the side, you know, like, because we go, hey, that wasn't, you know, exactly. Like right away, we're like, oh, that was Loki and Hydra.
I could argue Sokovia,
yeah,
because that was Tony.
well, yeah, fair call. You know, and I was kind of thinking along the lines of, you know, there's probably several incidents they could have used that do make it a little more murky, you know, like if they brought up when Hulk went crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, in Ultron and used that one. And there's another one. I feel like there's another one, but I can't think of it. And I haven't been able to think of it since I watched it.
Yeah.
But, you know, they could have used some that were a little more nebulous on whose fault it was.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I guess I was kind of thinking the one from the movie.
Yeah.
You know, they could have named that one specifically. And that's, you know, like you said, still, well, that was Crossbones. But, you know, a little more nebulous because she's the one who, like, threw it up and let it
blow
up.
And that's what kind of threw me. Because I get the idea that, you know, like, look, these things keep happening. You guys are too strong.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you blew up New York because you were saving us from an alien invasion, but it's that a lot of places get wrecked and you're always around.
Right.
And we need some sort of control over that. So I get that side of it. But it's framed as in, I mean, they bring up several times throughout the movie that Scarlet Witch is going to be feared and looked upon as some sort of villain and whatever else. And that's the part I don't get, because she didn't do anything other than maybe miss, you know?
Or move.
Yeah.
Move it, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. But that's kind of what the mainstream tends to do, right? Like,
true.
I mean, there's a lot of victim shaming.
Yeah.
You know, built into our society. So I mean, that's kind of, you know, not that they're necessarily victims, but can't punish the people who got blown up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't punish Crossbones because he's powder now.
Yeah.
You know, we can't punish Ultron because, you know, he's powder now. You know, can't punish Loki because he's in Asgard. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
everybody thinks he's dead.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. So I guess I get, you know, like I can see how that plays out, and I see that being probably how it would play out in the real world, you know?
I guess it's more a complaint about real life than it is about the movie, I guess.
That's true.
Well, I mean, it can be a complaint in the movie because it doesn't do much to, you know, they play up the two sides so much, and I feel like every time I watch this, I see and it may be my personal bias, I see less of Tony's side.
Dude, he has come off like a giant hypocrite every time I've watched this movie.
Yeah.
I think a ton at the beginning, but even throughout, which is one of the things I sort of appreciate about it, and I don't know if it's me projecting onto it or if it is how it was written, but I choose to believe that it's written that way. But even his snarkiness feels labored in a way that it doesn't in any other movie.
Mm-hmm.
It really feels like he doesn't have a leg to stand on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like, not cracking. I mean, they're not doing like another PTSD story or anything like that where he's buckling
in that
mental way, but he just seems so fatigued by all of it at this point.
Yeah.
And he himself, at least, doesn't ever really play up the fact that he's caused as much of this as anything else. You know, they kind of do it as a... They talk about him war profiteering and then stopping that. They don't talk about the fact that he's freaking out because he met the mother of this kid that died in Sokovia, even though he is, once again, directly responsible for what happened in Sokovia. He ignores that part completely.
Right.
But even his jabs, even the normal Tony jokes, all of that stuff, they just don't play the same.
Right.
You know, they're
right.
still funny, but they're nowhere near as aloof, you know? Yeah. And I think that's a really intricate way that the movie plays that part of the story. And again, maybe it's just me, but I think it's the movie being good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. Give us a note, Jaren.
Okay. Well, since we already kind of talked about the opening, my first opening
before we got past the opening, I wanted to bring up how much I love that there's a Black Widow line when they're going over the radio comms.
Yeah.
Where I think it's Falcon says something to her about, anybody ever told you
you're paranoid?
And she goes, not to my face. Why are they saying something behind my back or whatever? Like, I listen to that line. I'm like, man, I can't wait for that Black Widow movie.
Right. Yep. So I like that we start this and the Avengers, the new Avengers, are kind of working a pretty basic terrorist heist. And I think that it's like a good, it kind of shows like how they do like some world building, you know, like what do terrorists look like in this world, you know? We've seen the Ten Rings and whatever, but it's just a little thing like, oh, you know, Crossbones and his guys. He's not special, but he's kind of got, you know, some augmented abilities, and he wears a mask because that's what we do now.
Yeah.
You know, we're not just terrorists, right? So, I like that. I thought that's kind of a clever little bit of world building where, you know, they throw in Crossbones instead of just like randomly, oh, here's these ISIS guys stop.
Totally. Plus, it's always neat seeing the Avengers, like, being Avengers and, like, doing the superhero thing, like, outside of these main big storylines.
Right.
Yeah. Like it's, we get a peek at, like, their everyday job right here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, what do they do when it's not Ultron?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I liked that. Let's see. Note. So, when Zemo first goes and gets that Hydra guy, and that guy has, like, a file folder with, like, the Hydra label on it.
Yeah. Like the label was on the box.
Yeah.
Like, it was just the Hydra stamp right there. Yeah.
I thought that was, like, these guys, some of these guys have cyanide teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They won't talk.
Yeah.
But this guy keeps a box with Hydra imprinted on the side.
They didn't even show the outside of his house where he has the Hydra flag waving.
Oh, that's great.
That's just like the stars and bars in Germany.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I don't know where we are on the timeline wise, but I wanted to bring up too when during that Thunderbolt scene that we talked about, when they're going back and forth there, I really liked the inclusion of the whereabouts of Thor and Hulk coming up as one. Like, I thought that was one of his strongest points.
Yeah,
you know, when he was going through, because he was, you know, they're like, hey, we're not doing anything wrong. He's like, do you even know where these guys are? Because if I misplace a couple of weapons of mass destruction, I'm going to be in trouble. And you guys just go about it like nothing's happened at all, you know? Yeah.
Well, it makes
I would have...
Just going to say, I like how he... I mean, like, it makes perfect sense for Thunderbolt Ross to instantly isolate Hulk in that, too, right?
Yep.
Like, you don't even know where Hulk is right now.
Yeah.
Well, he's got, you know, like, he's got a vested interest in that.
Yeah.
So that's perfect.
Yeah. So I would have liked it... I mean, I did like that. I like that he says that, and that's a good point. I think it would have been a better point if he had just said Hulk. I think when he says Thor, that kind of hurts his point. And I don't like... I wish that when he said that, somebody was like, well, yeah, but your weapons of mass destruction aren't walking, talking people. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, they just kind of let it go. I'm like, oh, yeah, good point.
But,
you know, Thor is
a good point about Hulk, though.
It's a good point about Hulk.
Yeah.
Well, kinda, except that the whole point of Hulk is that he's a person, not a weapon. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like the fact that nobody said that, and Thor,
well,
Thor, who is the god king of another world, like maybe.
To fairness though, Hulk's not the person, at least in those eyes. Like Banner might be, but I mean Hulk's the guy who went nuts and just destroyed that town in the last movie. I mean that's the problem is he's uncontrollable.
So it's fine that Thunderbolt Ross says that, and when he says that, you go, oh, he's kind of got a point. The fact that Captain America or Natasha, who's in love with Banner, like nobody speaks up and says, well, you know, but Banner's our friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or whatever. You know what I mean? Like nobody sticks up for him. They're just like, oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like that's, yeah, that kind of bugs me. I feel like that's a miss.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I feel you.
I wasn't reading you right.
No, that's fine. This is a good moment. I love Zemo. I love that they did this with Baron Zemo, man.
Yeah.
Yep. Rather than him being some weird sweater-headed villain.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah. Wearing the weird people.
Right.
That's such a great actor, too.
Yeah.
Rule.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's just such a great villain in this movie. I mean, like, he accomplishes everything he sets out to accomplish, right?
Yeah.
Like, he wins at the end of this, basically.
Yep.
He gets exactly what he wants, and that's pretty awesome.
Yep. So I love the line after they blow up the Sokovia Accord signing at the UN or whatever.
Oh, yes. Which is where we get to meet Black Panther for the first time.
We get to meet T'Challa for the first time.
Yep, T'Challa.
T'Challa and T'Chaka.
Yep.
Right after that, when Captain America is talking to Agent 13, and she's who works for the CIA now, and she's like, we've got tips. Everybody thinks the Winter Soldier goes to their gym. I love that line. Because, man, how true would that be? Like, everybody would see the Winter Soldier everywhere.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know?
Yeah. Totally.
You just put it out there like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so speaking about Sharon Carter, this is when he...
In this movie, he finds out
that she's Sharon Carter.
Yep.
Because we have the sad moment where Peggy passes away.
Oh yeah, Peggy.
Right.
Dies.
Yeah, Peggy dies, and we go to Peggy's funeral, and it's crazy. Like, it really has that kind of impact because it's like, oh my gosh. Well, like, yeah, she's like 100 years old at this point, so she's had a really long life. But man, we are so attached to Peggy because we've seen Peggy in so much, right?
Even in Ant-Man.
Yeah,
she had her show by this point. She's made all these appearances in all these MCU movies. Like, we've got a real attachment with this character.
Yeah.
So we actually feel Steve's pain here.
Yeah.
And that's pretty powerful stuff. I thought that was... It's pretty sad, though. But yeah, so it's at that funeral that her niece gets up to speak, and he realizes that's Sharon Carter.
Yep.
Yeah,
he had no idea that she was related.
Sam's got to point it out. You know, I mean, he would have looked up at some point, but I can say, like, he's got his head down solemnly, and Sam's like nudging him. Look at this.
Yeah. So.
Well, and she delivers the line that is Cap's line, right?
Which one?
She gives a little speech, and she attributes it to Peggy, but that speech is from the comic books, and that was how Captain America explained his stance, right?
Tell me which part you're talking about.
I'm sorry. So the eulogy is, when you believe in something, along the lines of when you believe in something, so you compromise where you can, but where you can't, it's your duty to plant yourself like a tree, and even if the whole world says move, look at them and say, no, you move.
Yeah,
okay.
No, you move.
Right, and that was Cap's line from the comic book,
comic
right?
Story. Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds right. It's been a long time since I read Civil War, but...
Great line. Great scene. I like that Widow shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think it's interesting. I think it's a little disjointed that he's sitting there during the funeral with Sam, and then after the funeral she shows up and he's like, "What are you doing here?" And she's like, "Well, I thought you needed a friend." Like,
oh, poor Sam.
Yeah, right? just kind of weird.
I mean, it's just, I totally get what you mean. I hadn't thought of it before.
Yeah.
Sam's
but
in a bad
I
place, man. He's like Steve's new best friend, but Steve's real hung up on his old best friend.
Right. And
Sam,
I don't
getting it from every angle.
I don't have a problem with the scene. I just think it's weird choice of dialogue.
Like I said, I just never had thought about it. I had always thought of it as a... you're not saying it's a negative, but I had always thought of it as a positive because I like when they play up that relationship. Like, I love how well Widow and Cap get along.
Yes.
Yeah,
I do too. And I love that she was there.
Yeah.
And I love the idea because they have that little discussion about the Accords and he's like, I can't sign. And she's like, well, I know.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what are you doing here? And she's like, well, I thought you needed a friend. I like the idea. I'm here to support you as a friend. I'm not here to talk you into signing the thing. I love that.
Yeah.
It's just a weird choice in dialogue.
Yeah. This movie sucks.
What?
I love... okay, so my next note. So then we go to the intro for Black Panther because that's just, they have the... So Steve confronts Bucky. And they have that moment where I think it's interesting that Steve is like, hey, you know me. And he's like, I have no idea who you are. And he's like, yeah, you do. Like, yeah. You know? Yeah. I think that's a super interesting dichotomy there. And I kind of like the idea that Captain America just won't accept that Bucky, you know, because we don't really know what Bucky knows.
Yeah.
Right.
Or how
right.
far he is here.
Right.
And so I like the idea that Captain America is just that stubborn that he just won't accept that Bucky doesn't know
yep.
him.
Right.
You know, even though they had the fight and tried to kill each other and, yeah. you know, yeah. And all that stuff in Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, and I think he can probably see the difference, you know, like because he's fought Bucky when Bucky didn't know him.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's, you know, it's there. There's got to be a difference in demeanor.
Yeah, for
know?
Sure.
Yeah,
for sure. I have some issue with that scene when they come to arrest Bucky, though. Not a huge issue, because I actually love this scene. It's great. Like it is great. I really enjoy watching the kind of playthrough, you know, with Bucky just trying to being a little ruthless.
Yeah.
And, you know, the couple times where Cap kind of does something or saves somebody that Bucky just
yeah.
casually threw off the stairs.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Yeah, come on, man.
I love that. That is so great.
Yeah, so I love that scene. I do almost feel like it's a bit of a leap at that point for Cap just to be like, all right, let's take these guys down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
like.
Well, but I will defend that, though, because he even says the lead up there, like, these guys aren't really coming to arrest you.
Yeah.
You know, and so if he's got to, he's got to take those guys, because they're not going to walk in and try to take Bucky willingly, even if he would go, which he knows he won't. They're gonna come in and end that day.
Yeah.
And so if he's got to take out a few cops to do it, I think he'd be willing to do that for all the sacrifices he's making to save Bucky.
For sure.
I don't think that's the biggest one. And he's not going lethal force or anything on these guys, yeah. which Captain America is willing to do in a war
yes.
situation.
Yes.
We know from the movies. So I can defend that one.
And that's fine. It still feels like a little bit of a leap for me. Just a hair. I don't know. And I'm not going hard on that scene. You're right.
Yeah.
You know, you're right.
I like the taste it gives us right away of how well these two fight together. Like
yeah.
how in-tuned they are.
Yep.
You know. We've seen them have battles in the past, but they were the ones where Captain America was a superhero and Bucky was just a soldier.
Yeah.
You know? And now right. we're getting a taste of them both being on equal footing and working together. And we got a lot more of that as the movie goes on. But
right
here, we just get that initial surge of it, and automatically you're like, ooh, in. In.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. 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 Totally. Yeah. Totally.
So Bucky jumps out, and then that's when Black Panther shows up.
Yep. Right. Yeah. And which is cool stuff.
Black Panther comes in hard.
Yeah.
And I think it does a really great job of like immediately establishing like Black Panther's here. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and he's on that level. You know, he's not Ant-Man. He's not, you know, I mean, we love him, but he's not Scarlet Witch or Hawkeye.
Right.
You know,
right.
he is a Captain America level superhero showing
yeah,
up.
I think so. You're downplaying Scarlet Witch right there. But I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would fully agree with that on a character level for
right.
Scarlet Witch. On a power level, though, like they keep playing up how strong she is.
Yeah, you know? Fair. So he's okay. So he's not Sam or.
There you go.
Yeah,
he's not a B+ player,
yes.
John.
Yeah,
exactly. He's an A.
Again,
A
I get
game.
Yeah, I get what you're saying and agree.
Right.
I just because I think that's I mean they're making a bigger and bigger deal out of that.
Yeah.
How even starting in this movie, how powerful mm-hmm. she can be.
Yeah. Fair call.
I like when they're all arrested and they're in the car and Cap's like basically just trying to talk to Black Panther.
Yeah,
and he like asks him. He's like, when he asks him if his suit's vibranium and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, Sam asks him if he likes cats first.
Yeah, yeah.
So you
yeah.
like cats?
So you like cats?
which I think is super funny because he asked T'Challa, so you like cats? But then he gets super mad when they hand him the receipt for a bird costume.
Yes, yes, yes. Bird costume? Come on. Like, I didn't write it.
I forgot right. about that. Bird costume?
I just like that they write receipts for for his stuff. I really like, Martin Freeman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Weird transition there. On my part, because I'm jumping back again and totally lost my words for a second there. Just during that whole chase scene, though, like just that glimpse we got of how fast these guys are.
Yeah. I know, right?
Because they're just running past some of these cars.
When the one car that Cap's driving rolls out and he basically just steps out of the driver's door and starts running in front of that's insane, man. Yeah.
And then the car's chasing him.
while it's
rolling, you know. But the way the way he does that door opens as that thing's spinning sideways and he just steps out in a sprint.
Like, yeah.
Oh God, that's cool.
It's amazing.
So cool.
It's so amazing.
All right, Martin Freeman. Love Martin Freeman.
Just glad he's here.
Yeah, exactly. Delightful.
Yeah. He's good. He's good in this. You know, he shows up with no fanfare.
Yep.
Not like we haven't even had any. Like his introduction is just him. You know, being like, all right, you're arrested.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. I'm giving you a office instead of a cell. I trust you not to break out of it or whatever he says.
Yeah.
You know? But he's great. I loved him in this. Glad he's here because he's so good in Black Panther.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Totally. I had forgot that he was actually part of this movie.
Oh, did
like,
you?
Oh, really? Well, because as soon as I saw him when I was watching this time, I was like, oh, hey, the guy from Black Panther. Yeah. Yeah, good connection. Okay. Yeah, so that was cool. And this is where Zemo sneaks in.
Yep.
And basically hypnotizes Bucky again to get the information
he needs. We get that big interaction between Steve and Tony here.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, Tony's kind of laying his point out on the line. And again, like I said, one of my favorite parts about this whole movie is how they play Tony out, because I'm never on Tony's side.
Yeah.
But I really get the feeling that Tony's not 100% sure he's on Tony's side.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit of redemption to a guy that I think is generally wrong in this movie from my perspective. Well, I also like how you can think he's right if you want. You know, that's fine. Like, they play the Civil War side of that fine. They definitely aim it towards Steve.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely Steve's movie as far as that goes. But, I mean, he's still a good guy, but I can't root for him.
Right.
You know?
Well, even kind of when he's trying to convince Steve to sign here, he even kind of says, "You know, it's fine. We'll sign it now just to appease them, and then we'll amend it later. We'll adjust when we need to adjust things."
Yeah.
And you know, so he's even kind of talking about how like they're just doing it now to get it done and out there and make everybody happy. But you know, we can maybe adjust this later on as things progress.
Which
is
always scary though, especially when a businessman like that is like, just sign and it'll be fine.
Exactly. But that's when he slips about Wanda being confined to the house.
Yeah.
And that's when Steve is just like, what? Why are you keeping her locked up? And that's what basically changes Steve's mind immediately about how he's definitely not going to sign because now we're keeping our own team prisoner.
Yep. You just get the feeling while he's trying to convince Cap, he's trying to convince himself also.
Yeah. And, yeah, know, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, and you know, he's kind of, so this is the first time that Tony Stark has probably ever felt guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know? How does he deal with it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so that I get that aspect of it, you know, like he's never felt like that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's always just done whatever the hell he wanted. And now he feels some repercussion.
Yep.
And how does he respond to that? Well, he overreacts, same way he reacts to everything.
Right, yep. Right.
I will say that he does bring up some good points on an outside level, though. It's like, even if you don't fully agree with the nature behind it, like, the point that he kind of brings up is, like, something is coming.
Yeah.
You know, at least this we can get ahead of and be part of.
Yeah.
But if it's not this, it's going to be something, and it's very possible it's going to be worse.
Right.
You know, and that's the one point where I could almost agree with him, whereas, you know, like, you're not right about leading up to it, but you are right about the aftermath. So.
Right. Well, you know, Rhodes says at one point, one of the only times I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, when they're, after Ross leaves and they're having a little discussion amongst themselves, Rhodey says something about 120 countries want to sign this thing. We can't ignore that.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the only times I'm like, maybe so.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are we at?
Well, Zemo hypnotizes Winter Soldier here. Yep. To get the information out of him, right? Mission report.
Mission report.
I always try to remember all the... I fail miserably, but I always try to remember all those words. You know? Boxcar. Homecoming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he breaks out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's that cool little fight scene. I like seeing T'Challa just go right at him without the suit on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's another important moment for T'Challa, where it's like, oh, he's in it regardless. Yeah. He's not just a suit. He's not Tony, you know.
Yeah.
And they give that because Tony runs out there and Tony just gets beat up.
Yeah, I tell
you what, though, when they, and I think it was even in the trailers, I want to say, but that whole thing where he's got just the glove,
yeah,
and he, like, Winter Soldier tries to shoot him,
yep,
and the look on his face, you know, when he's like, oh. Oh, yeah. You know, like, right. that was great.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Yeah, because they, I think it's Widow asks him if he brought a suit. And he's like, oh, yeah, a three-piece, whatever, because he's just talking about the suit he's wearing, because he doesn't have his Iron Man costume with him at this.
Right.
So, yeah, he just has the little glove that he puts on to go out there, and, yeah, he just gets beat.
Yeah.
He just gets beat in this fight.
Yep. And then T'Challa runs in and is...
Doesn't Widow get power?
And is...
Yeah. Widow get powerbombed through a table here.
Yeah.
But I love it too. I mean, Sharon Carter runs up and goes after, like, everybody's just fighting.
Yeah.
But he gets away.
He gets away. Sam's there too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Chasing him.
Yep.
Well, he gets away. He almost gets away because this is where he runs.
The doctor gets away.
Oh, the doctor gets away. Yeah, the doctor gets away. But Bucky,
I was trying to play that through in my mind because I remember them like finding the coat and running outside. I was like, oh, that was the doctor though. That was or Zemo.
Yeah,
not a real doctor.
Not a doctor.
But this is where Bucky runs up and jumps in the helicopter, and Cap chases him down.
Oh man,
the scene.
I feel like Chris Evans works out,
dude. Holy cow, man.
Maybe
he might.
Maybe a little.
Just a smidge. Yeah, dude, that scene's insane where he's like holding onto the helicopter in the building. Ah, that's crazy. Yeah, that's good stuff.
I love those Cap moments.
I know.
You know? And some of it are about fortitude and some of it's about just strength.
Yep.
Yeah.
And some of it's a little mix of both.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think just holding a helicopter onto a building. Like the stubbornness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you to leave. I guess I'll do this.
Yeah. It's crazy. Where does that take us from here, though? That's
So then we can jump to where they have him. Where they have him, and they get the explanation from him.
Yeah.
So
we find he wakes up and he's okay again.
Yep. When he wakes up and they've got his arm in the trapped
vice.
In the yeah.
Yeah, they got his arm in a vice.
Big industrial sized vice.
Yeah.
And they have the conversation, and he tells them about the other Winter Soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Here's where
the spring soldier and the fall soldier.
So I have an issue here.
Okay.
And it kind of. All right. So there's kind of this narrative that Captain America was the only super soldier ever, and that without the doctor, they couldn't ever replicate his serum and his process or anything. Like, except for these six guys, and except for Blonsky and the Incredible Hulk.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, like...
Yeah. Well...
What's the difference? Because they just... Like, Thunderbolt Ross just injects Blonsky with some stuff, and he's good.
Yeah,
and
but he's guys, not good. It screws his brain up even more than he already was, you know? Like,
It screws his brain up, but when would the military care about that?
And that's also present day, not 70 years ago when they... I mean, they've been working on that serum the whole time, trying to get it perfected, you know.
Are they though?
Yeah,
but okay.
I mean, he hasn't been injecting other. It's not like he was waiting for Blonsky to come along to try it out.
I feel like it seems like that though. Like they have to go. I feel like they go and pull that out of
phase there.
Maybe.
I mean, it's in some sort of cryo, and there's a doctor and everything like that.
Right.
It's definitely not the same.
Yeah.
It's not like a standard thing that they have and are using, and it's not like they would just be sitting on that if they knew that it worked or anything like that.
But these guys kind of just went and made it work. They just stole the serum and injected in some dudes and had some other super soldiers that they
used. Did they steal the serum?
Yeah, that's what Bucky told. That's why Bucky killed.
That's what Bucky Stark. Stole from the Starks.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah. Was it complete then?
I mean, they just took it and used it.
I guess so.
They used it to make these new super soldiers.
Right. Well, now I'm trying to place why they don't have 1,000 of these guys.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's my only point. And doesn't break the movie or doesn't break these movies for me. It's just one of those somewhat rare moments where you're like, hold on, Marvel.
Yeah. Hang on, Marvel.
Well, because I've always wondered what are Bucky's enhancements outside of having a metal arm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And he's very super soldier-y.
Right. Yeah, totally. And they kind of talk about that, you know, because there's the one moment where they're like, who knows what those German scientists did to him while they had him, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe it's just the fact that these other, maybe these other serums are enhancing, but not to Cap's level.
Yeah,
you know, that could be
which is entirely possible, because Bucky does rely on his arm an awful lot when he has to fight Cap.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
again, not world breaking. Oh,
for sure.
Just like
hey, we're here to discuss
guys,
this stuff.
What are we doing?
I don't know about the listeners, but my favorite part about this show is the new perspectives I get.
That's what we hope to bring, I think, with the podcast.
Yes.
So this is basically where they're now deciding that they got to go to the base where these super soldiers are being held, and this is kind of where we get our little teams assembled, right?
Right.
For the battle that's going to happen at the airport.
And the assumption is that Baron Zemo wants to get these
super soldiers
to use them to fight the Avengers, presumably, or whatever he wants.
Exactly.
Because he said, he tells them he wants to topple an empire. I want to topple an empire. So they think he wants to use these super soldiers to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. So now we have our two teams assemble.
Yep. So we get the great scene, like, Tony goes to meet Peter.
Yeah.
Which is good stuff.
Because they both
Peter,
have, like...
Peter Parker.
Yeah, Peter Parker.
Separately, obviously, but Tony and...
Spider-Ham.
Tony and Steve both have those moments where they're like, we need extra help.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and somebody along the way. Well, I guess for Steve, it's Sam going, I know a guy. And for Tony, was it Widow who says something to him? And he's like, ah, and Tony's the one who's like, I know a guy. You know?
Yeah.
Well, they both know a guy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, no. Remember, Widow knows a guy.
Oh, that's right.
I have an idea. Yep. And he's like, I have an idea. Where's yours? And she's like, downstairs. Where's yours? And that's when Queens.
Yeah. And so we get the fun interactions with it. This is our first taste of Peter Parker, the new Peter Parker, which is awesome stuff. And Aunt May, we get lots of the stuff with Tony Stark pointing out how hot Aunt May is, which is just hilarious, because I just remember when we got the casting for Aunt May, that was kind of everybody's reaction, was just like, what? Because everybody always thinks of Aunt May as an older woman.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of funny, because I think I've looked something up before where actually, like, her age in this is actually about the same age as the woman who played Aunt May the first time around in the Tobey Maguire movies. But, like, the age difference is not that different as far as age goes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I wish I would have verified that before I just said it on a podcast. But I'm certain that's a discussion I've read
that's
somewhere.
That's a geek easy mantra.
Yeah, there you go.
Say it and verify it later, maybe.
Good stuff there, though. I love how Tony just knows that he's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And, like, he's trying to, like, hide it and everything at first. Like, he pokes the little crawl space thing in the ceiling, and the suit just falls down. That's good stuff. He's using the little homemade suit and everything. So, I don't know. It's just really fun moments. I love getting the interactions with Peter there, which is a great little lead into Homecoming, which is coming up real quick. And I just love Spider-Man so much. And that's one thing that I get real excited about with this movie, because when we get to that airport scene finally and we actually get to see Spider-Man in this movie, man, I just geek out so hard for every bit of Spider-Man we get in this fight. It's fantastic. And it's one of those things where you almost worry about, like, them stuffing Spider-Man into a movie like this and making it feel like it's one of those, like, shoehorn things or something. But, man, I don't know. Just the way they played him out in that fight scene is so, like, the kind of Spider-Man you want to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's one of those cameos that you want to see. And, again, it's just one of those things where it's like you There's a lot of old Hollywood that even if they made the decision to do that, they'd be like, well, let's throw Spider-Man in there so we can throw him in the trailer and make a few more dollars, you know?
Right.
How's that going to work? I don't know. Throw him in there. It's whatever.
Yeah.
It's not what this is.
You know? Right,
like,
right.
They figure out a way, like, not only how does it... It's a little shoehorned.
Yeah.
But randomly, Tony's just like, oh, I'll go to New York. I saw a kid on YouTube, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And figure that out. So there definitely is, like, it's put in there, but you can also tell that it's well thought out.
Right.
Like they wrote that in. They didn't put it in. They wrote it in.
Right.
And it plays perfectly through that fight scene. I don't think we could have gotten a better introduction to the Spider-Man really joining the MCU.
Yeah.
It's so much less clunky than doing an origin movie for him instead and then figuring out how to wedge him in.
Yeah, totally.
You just hit the ground running with him.
Totally.
And they had an idea of where they were going with it for the actual Spider-Man movie that plays into all of this.
It is
a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's a neat nod going back to the comic storyline, too, because remember, Spider-Man was a big part of Civil War.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of the character that was stuck in the middle of the two, and he did ultimately join Tony's side, which caused a whole bunch of problems for Spider-Man, because then everybody found out that Peter Parker was Spider-Man.
Yep.
And then Aunt May died because Dr. Octopus killed her, right? Or Kingpin. Kingpin killed her, yeah. So it's neat to see that nod and that connection to the books by bringing Spider-Man into the fold a little bit there. But it was cool.
I really like, because a big part of the comic book storyline was the secret identity thing.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And so I really like how they retconned that into the, because they won't really deal with secret identities that much in this. I mean, some of them might have them, but it's never like an issue.
Yeah.
But they really took that storyline and curved it into a way to where it fit with what they were doing here.
It's neat how they've done that a lot with these movies.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're building their own world with the MCU, but it's cool how they can apply these same big popular storylines and make it work and mesh it in.
And so far, Spider-Man's the only one who really matters if he has a secret identity. He's the only one with a secret identity. He's the only one that kind of matters.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve Rogers is Steve Rogers. Everybody knows Steve Rogers.
Right.
You know, the whole point of Tony Stark is, you know, I am Iron Man.
Like, Tony's the big one there that definitely does. I sort of got the impression Steve Rogers was under the radar. But that's one of those, even in the comic books, I've never fully known exactly how that works. Because they just don't make a big deal out of him having to hide it, per se.
But
people also don't rush up to him on the street going, hey, you're Captain America, every time he's out and about.
But that's always been a big part of Spider-Man's storyline.
He's got
to protect Aunt May. He's got to protect Mary Jane. So that's why he keeps it secret. Yeah, let's just get to the airport fight then. The airport fight's amazing.
Please, can we just stop the podcast and go watch it?
Yeah, I know, right? It's just, there's some amazing moments here. Again, with the Spider-Man stuff real quick, the way he quips and talks all the way through is just so perfect and amazing. And I love how he, like, geeks out over everybody's individual technologies, like, when he's fighting them. Like, he just loves, like, Winter Soldier's metal arm, and he likes...
You got a metal arm?
Yeah, you got a metal arm, and he likes...
And he
likes,
just catches it.
Yeah.
Winter Soldier's just like, oh, goodness. and Spider-Man's like, oh, this is awesome.
And he likes Sam's wings. Yeah. And, you know, it's like all that.
He's asking him about him.
Yeah, you know? He's like geeking out about all the technology and asking. I like Sam.
I love how annoyed Sam is.
Yeah.
Because, like, even right away, like they're running through that building, Winter Soldier and Sam, which, for the record, I also love their relationship, which we haven't really touched on that a lot, but they've got such a love-hate thing going on.
Yeah.
It is exactly that, what you were talking about. Like, Sam's like, I'm his new best friend, and you're his old best friend. You know? But when they're running along there, and Spider-Man jumps on that window, and Winter Soldier's just like, what is going on here? And Sam's like, everybody's got to have a gimmick now.
Yeah. You know? Well, like, he also tells Spider-Man, I don't know how many of these you've done, but there's usually not this much talking.
How many fights you've been in.
That's good stuff.
Well, since we're talking about that, we got to jump back to the car scene with Sam and Bucky.
Yep. Oh man, yeah.
Can you move your seat up?
No.
and then the look they give Cap after he kisses Sharon Carter.
Yeah,
they're both.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Amazing.
That's good stuff.
I like how both of the new recruits that Tony's side and Steve's side got are the quip guys.
Man, Ant-Man's amazing too.
Exactly. Because even though they don't play off of each other much at all in this scene, like, they are both just nonstop.
Right. Yeah,
you know, every time it goes back and forth, one of them is just doing that bit, and it just it flows. You know,
like, we get that moment at the beginning, which is from the trailer, where Spider-Man steals Cap's shield. which is awesome too.
Yeah, they both mark out for being there too.
Yeah. And then, you know, Ant-Man's the one that gets the shield back, and I just love that moment when he pops up and he goes, "I believe this belongs to you, Captain America."
Well, you remember when they pulled him out of the van, starstruck he was, you know? So he does that great bit where he's like, "Oh, it's so great to meet you," and he turns around and Scarlet Witch is standing there, and he's just like, "Hey, I know you. You're great, too."
Yeah.
And he turns right back around and is, like, gushing over Captain America some more.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's awesome.
Did you get a sense that Spider-Man had a spider sense in this fight? Because there's that point, like, Winter Soldier throws something at him, something large, like a big sign or something, while he's behind this pillar. And he's facing away from it. And they close in on him, and I don't remember if his eyes, like, tightened or widened or whatever, but I felt like he knew something was coming.
Yeah.
And dodged it, and then caught it and threw it back at him. Because that's that scene where he's like, "Hey, mister, I think you lost this," or whatever, yeah. Throws it right back at him. But I'd never noticed it before, but this time it felt... I mean, they didn't shake the camera put the things up above or whatever.
I mean, that's kind of how they treat a spider sense, though, like, even in Homecoming,
well,
right?
Well, there's a lot of talk... Well, in Homecoming, there was a lot of talk about how there kind of wasn't one. And you didn't really get the sense of him having one. It was kind of wondering where the absence of that was. Like, I mean, even at the very end, like, he sneaks in and doesn't realize Aunt May's standing right behind him.
Right.
You know, and stuff like that. But, and I think that is maybe why I just never was paying that close of attention.
I guess I never really caught that before.
Rewatching this anytime after Homecoming. But this time, not knowing if he's even got one, when that happened, it kind of caught me. I was like, "Oh, was that a thing, or was it just a coincidence?"
Huh?
I mean, it can be either, I guess. Whatever they decide going forward.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know. I guess I never really realized that they didn't play up on the spider sense too much.
Yeah.
I just, I guess I just always think about it as part of the character. I don't even
for
really,
sure.
Yeah. Man, there's so much else going on in the scene. What are some other moments?
I love my favorite moment is. When Iron Man rolls up on Hawkeye, he's like, "Hey, Clint, retirement not agreeing with you?"
Yeah.
And he's just like, played 18, shot 18.
Yeah.
And just the not, I really like, Clint's through this whole fight.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, he's great. I love when he's about to fight, T'Challa.
Yeah.
He's like, "We haven't met. I'm Clint." He's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
he's like, "I don't care."
I like when they first get into it and he's fighting with Widow. You know,
yeah.
She's like, "Are we still gonna be friends after this?" He's like, "Depends on how hard you hit me."
Yeah. Well, and then, like, cause Scarlet Witch kind of butts in and, like, saves him, and she's like, "You were pulling your punches," or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's just, you know, there's such a camaraderie here.
Yep.
You know, as great as this scene is, it's not, and no, at no point do you ever get the sense that any of them are trying to kill the other.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
That's why it plays so great.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Until we get to the end.
Yeah.
And Rhodey goes down.
Yeah, and it's another one of those, like I talked about earlier, and we've skipped over a bunch of them, I think. There's a lot of weird, like, false blame in this movie, because Tony gets super mad at Sam.
Yeah.
Because Rhodey got shot out of the sky. Sam was also trying to save Rhodey when he got shot out of the sky. Sam didn't shoot Rhodey out of the sky.
Vision did.
Vision was about to shoot Sam.
All
out
Sam
of the
did
sky.
Was not get shot out of the sky.
Right.
He just moved. That's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There is, and I agree with that. There is the scene that I didn't remember, though, right after that, where he is kind of mad at Vision, too.
Yeah.
You know, because he's like, "How did this happen?" You know, and he's like, "I don't know. I was distracted." He was like, "I didn't think that happened." And he's like, "Neither did I."
Yeah.
You know, so there is that little bit there. But yeah, it is.
Yeah, but yeah,
in
but
that
he,
moment.
Yeah. He doesn't go barreling at Vision or anything.
Right. Like, he doesn't shoot Vision. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he shoots Sam.
It might be one of those things, too. Like, I think it showed power of the Infinity Stone. Because there was that moment earlier in the movie where Vision talks about how he doesn't really have any control over it, and he doesn't know how it works, and he doesn't know, you know.
For sure.
And so then you've got this moment where he shoots a laser out of it and probably had no idea how powerful it was going to be, or maybe even how to aim it and direct it. And so that might be a neat little, like, Infinity Stone reference too, right there.
How great was the visual on
Iron Man and Falcon flying at War Machine just as he lands.
Oh, man,
as he plummets down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Poor Rhodey.
Poor Rhodey. He'll get better.
Very quickly.
Yeah, he'll get better. Tis a flesh wound.
I mean, eventually it becomes...
Tis a flesh wound.
Eventually it becomes a non-issue, but right now, poor Rhodey.
Yeah, yeah. So that pretty much brings us to...
Yeah, we can probably
the
just...
The base, right? At the end. So we're at the base at the end, and...
there's that little bit we get the introduction to that prison.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. The raft.
Yeah, the raft.
Hank Pym always told me, never trust a star.
Yes. Yeah. Love that. Love that.
Who are you?
Who are you?
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, that was good stuff. Yeah, so all of them are in prison.
And I love Clint just coming at Tony right there, too.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. Yeah.
Didn't used to mean
criminals
me.
Criminals didn't used to mean me. Yeah.
Futurist, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, man. Clint.
He's like awesome, Clint. Dude. Yeah, he's great.
He's so good.
He's great.
He's so good.
So yeah, if we just skip to the base part then.
Yep.
So
so good.
Yeah, Cap and Winter Soldier
get to the base.
Zemo's already inside. Yep. And that's when they discover the chambers with the super soldiers.
Tony shows up first, right?
Before they go into the... Yeah. Well, they get in the base and Tony...
They're in the base, yeah, but before they discover all the soldiers are dead.
Okay, yes. You're right. Yeah. Tony shows up first.
So they've since found the doctor who... The body of the doctor who Baron Zemo killed.
Yeah.
When they found the body, they also found a mask that he used to impersonate Bucky to kick all this off.
Yep.
So Tony Stark has found...
Figured out that Cap figured it out. Right the whole time.
Yep.
Because that's another thing. I mean, we haven't really talked about that, but like outside of just the Accords and stuff like that, the big push for a lot of that is the fact that Cap's putting all this on the line for this known murderer that has to be stopped. And Cap's the only one going, it's not that way. He's done some stuff, but it's different now, and something's fishy here. And nobody on the other side is into that. Like they all get why he's got to be brought down, and Cap's the only one. Well, I guess, you know, Sam and the people who have Cap's back, but this is where Tony finally goes, you know, outside of the Accords part, there's a whole other mystery that he just finds out he was 100% wrong on.
Yeah.
You know? And I think because we know that T'Challa is following Tony also, but he has figured it out also by the time he gets there, at least. Or
I don't think
by the very end he has.
Well, by the very end.
Yeah.
But I don't think he really finds out what's going on until he gets to like he gets there and hears the explanation.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, he's far enough behind him that he doesn't run in and start fighting them all.
Yeah.
You know, he hears the explanation and realizes what's going on.
Okay.
Right.
So we've got our little confrontation with Tony and Steve. On a friendly level, finally, as they're getting together. What is it he called Winter Soldier?
Manchurian Candidate.
Manchurian Candidate. Could you calm that down?
Yeah.
You seem a little on edge, Tony.
It's been a long day.
So all of the super soldiers have a bullet through their head.
Yep.
They're all dead. They're all dead. Zemo killed
D-E-D-dead.
Them all. D-E-D-dead. And this is when Zemo basically appears and kind of...
Lays it out
to him.
I really love the part where he's like face to face with Cap, and he's like, "Ah, there's a little green in your eyes."
Yeah,
yeah.
I've been looking for something.
Nice to see an imperfection.
Nice to see an imperfection.
Yeah, yeah. And he plays back the old surveillance footage that shows Winter Soldier murdering Tony's parents. So Tony sees this for the first time. He asks Cap if he knew. Basically, Cap did. And was trying to protect him.
Which we didn't know that.
Right? We didn't know that Cap knew, I don't think.
Okay.
I didn't know that until that moment.
Yeah.
But Cap basically was like... Because he was basically like, I thought it was better that you didn't know.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. I think that moment where Cap is basically sort of backtracking. I want to say it because that's the... Least, like, we keep talking about how Cap these moments are. Like, that moment's so Cap. Like, that's the least Cap moment in all of these movies, I think. But not on an unbelievable level. It's not like, oh, he wouldn't do that. It's just that finally one time we get Steve in a position where he was probably wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's not sure what to do right away.
Right.
Right.
Because he kind of dances around. He was like, well, I didn't know for sure yeah. or something like that.
Yeah.
But he pretty much knew.
Right. You know? Yeah. Right. So Tony loses his cool here, and this is a big fight ensues right here.
And this is another one of the few moments where I can kind of get behind Tony a little bit. I don't agree with him still, but there's that point where Cap's like, you know this is all nonsense or whatever, and Tony's like, don't care, he killed my mom.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's at that point you're like, all right. You know, he's still wrong, but I get it.
Yeah. Well, this isn't about the Accords.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right? You know, he's not trying to bring him down because the Accords.
Yeah. Like, but even the fact is, like, he's not really a bad guy, and it makes it, like, fine, but this still happened. So,
right.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I don't care.
Martha.
Martha Stark.
Martha Stark.
Martha Stark. so that's the great point of comparison of these movies, right? You know, I love comparing these, and I'm sure plenty of other people have made this comparison, and everybody's heard this before, but Marvel gave us Civil War, and they said, you know, Cap versus Iron Man.
These were the same year too.
Yeah. They were almost the same week. Yeah.
Right.
Like yeah. they were scheduled the same day for a while.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so they give us the big blow up at the big fireworks show at the airport.
Yeah.
And they give us everything we could want from Cap versus Iron Man.
Right.
And then they set up the Friends Forever fight, and by the time we get to that, we're pretty ready for Cap and Iron Man to be friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they give us then they totally swerve us, and they make it even more personal.
Yep. Yeah.
And they give us the fight that you can't come back from.
Right.
The point of no return fight.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Batman v Superman. Right? Not only do we not get a fireworks show or anything really remotely interesting going on for a long time, then they give us like 5 minutes of Superman and Batman punching each other before they give us a real weak Friends Forever fight. Right? You know? Like, it just doesn't, like, one delivers, one doesn't, you know? Yeah. One over delivers and one doesn't.
Yep. I want to point out too, while we're talking about that stuff, and I wasn't thinking about the DC comparison there at all when we've been doing this. I wish I had put a little bit more thought and research into how those dates worked out.
Yeah.
Because that was the funniest thing in the world as that was happening. Because when, you know, Marvel had their release dates years ahead of time,
right?
And yeah.
DC announces Batman versus Superman, and then in a bold move, they're like, well, we're gonna bring it out the first week of May of you know, this year, and everybody's like, well, Marvel's already got one, what's Marvel gonna do? I mean, if this is Batman versus Superman, is Marvel gonna move? What's gonna happen? And Marvel's just like, cool.
Yeah.
And they're like, we've got the two biggest superhero names on the planet are gonna face off against each other, no one can contend with that. And Marvel's like, it's fine, whatever. we're pretty good with our guys. And DC's just like, we have decided that we prefer March. We think that's better now.
That's totally how it is. Do you remember there was all of those memes that were online during Civil War that like showed a screen cap of Steve and then a screen cap of Tony, and then it ended with Civil War, and they like added different phrases to it.
Yeah.
My favorite one was the one where Steve's caption says, is your mom's name Martha? And Tony's just says, no. And then it goes, Civil War.
I totally forgot about it. I wish those would come back.
Oh man, good stuff. All right. Yeah. So knockdown, drag out fight between them. I love at the end of that too, where, like Cap wins at the end, basically. Yeah. Like grounds Tony down and like wrecks his suit and everything.
Knocks the helmet off.
They've got that scene of Bucky and Cap just going at Iron Man and just laying it to him.
Oh man, yeah.
And the shield's going back and forth. Yeah. And they're just, and he's just blasting out.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting his licks in, but just taking it to him. And that's straight from the trailers, man.
Yeah.
That sold 5 of the 6 tickets I bought just on that scene.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I do love that scene where Cap and Bucky are walking away and Tony is just incapacitated on the ground, but he's yelling, you don't deserve that shield.
Yeah.
My father made that shield. And Steve just kind of stops and just like drops the shield and walks off. Man, that's heavy stuff, man.
Hey, at some point in Endgame, he's got to get that shield back, right? How hard I'm going
to
mark out.
He's got to. It's crazy to think that he hasn't had it since this movie.
I know.
Well, I mean,
but we also have only seen him one more time.
He's only been in one other movie.
That's true. Infinity War is the next time we see Cap after this.
Yep.
That's crazy to think about too. Yeah. Actually. Yeah, and then we get that, because this goes back to what you were saying too. This is where Black Panther kind of figured out what was going on. Yeah. He's got that scene with Zemo.
Yep.
Which is a great scene,
which
too.
Is such a great scene.
Well, man, they just did such a good job of establishing Black Panther in the hierarchy of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they kind of give him he just rises above vengeance, right? You know,
yeah.
he just decides right there, nope, I'm better than this.
Yep.
You know, and...
Yep. And he keeps him from killing himself.
Yeah,
he saves him, too, and he's just like, nope, it'd be better for you to be... in jail.
Yeah.
I like the I don't know if it's regret what it is, but the moment where he's basically telling Black Panther what happened to his family and how he found his father holding his wife and son, and you can see the emotion coming through on how that stuff, and then he apologizes for killing T'Challa's father. You know, like, I'm very sorry about your father. He seemed like a good man who had a beautiful son. And it gives me the...
Yeah, man. Yeah,
shiveries, man, every time that comes out.
He's such a good villain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What a good villain.
Do you think... not for a second do I think the strength of the Black Panther movie was based on Civil War.
Right.
I don't think it crossed the $1 billion mark because of Civil War. But do you think it would have been as hyped, I guess, if we hadn't had... such a strong showing from Black Panther in here? I mean, do you think that really set the table for people being excited about the Black Panther movie? Because he's a lesser known character as far as that goes.
Right. Man, I... I hate to say no. But I'm going to say no. Because as much as I'm fawning over... Black Panther here. I really think the strength of that movie was how hard the success of that movie was how hard they went at the marketing with all black cast, all black production,
cultural significance of that movie is probably the biggest driving force.
I think had he not been in Civil War, them building it off that and having that movie that way would have been the same.
I just know a lot of people came out of Civil War who weren't necessarily giant comic book fans and certainly weren't giant Black Panther fans talking about how great he was.
Oh yeah.
And I remember taking note of that at the time.
So, and so that's why I hate to say no, because there's definitely a great introduction.
Yeah,
and I'm also certainly not saying that was the driving force behind the success, because there's a lot of characters who are introduced strong in these movies that don't turn around into cultural phenomenons to that level by any means.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, do you think that was a notable boost?
No. And the reason, because everybody who saw Black Panther, everybody who saw him in Civil War was going to see Black Panther anyway. Right? Had he not been in Civil War, I don't think, you know, there's a very small percentage of people who would have gone to see Civil War, but then be like, Black Panther? I don't know who Black Panther is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
However, what made the difference for Black Panther is all the people who didn't see Civil War and didn't care about Civil War, but wanted to go see the all-black Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I agree with that. And, okay, so I think that pretty much brings us to closing points of this film.
That wraps it up, man.
Yeah, that pretty much wraps it up. This movie is...
Yeah, we do lead off with the cell phone thing.
Yes, that's right.
End off, I guess.
End off with the cell phone.
Because you remember...
Well, that's Infinity War.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a pager.
That's a pager, Cap goes in and breaks everybody out of the raft.
Yep. Yeah.
And, sends Tony that Tony Stank that package.
Tony Stank. Are you Tony Stank? Yeah. Yes, this is Tony Stank.
I love how happy Rhodey is.
Yeah.
That,
Yes, this is Tony Stank. You're in the right place.
And it's got that.
Never dropping that, by the way.
Yeah, it's got that very old cell phone, that little flip phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And the note with the voiceover from Cap basically saying, hey, you know, I'm sorry about what happened, and I'm sorry I didn't tell you about your parents, and I understand where you were coming from on all of this, and it's sad that we are where we are, but do know that I'll always be there if you need me, and here's the contact method.
Yeah.
You know. And then he puts General Thunderbolt Ross on hold.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Yeah, man, this movie was a big turning point, I think, for the MCU, you know. Some high stakes here, and it's like all of these movies have had like bigger and bigger stakes. I feel like the Cap movies specifically keep ramping up the stakes for the MCU, because with Winter Soldier we got the whole fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the big Hydra thing, which was a huge game changer for the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, and now with this Cap movie we've basically got the disintegration of the team. Yeah. You know, the big fallout, and it's pretty cool just to see. I mean, it's and this is all just a big climb too, because we're all leading into Infinity War, which is the biggest of stakes, right?
Right.
But it's, man, the Cap movies just really continue to be strong all the way through. Like, his movies have just been some of the best, I think, out of the whole MCU.
Well, you know, I think it's real interesting, and it kind of gets lost in the shuffle because we know we have Infinity War coming,
right?
And because this feels more like Avengers 4 than it does like Captain America 3. Well, Avengers 3.
Yeah.
Avengers 3 instead of Captain America 3.
You're right, yeah.
But, man, like, we kind of talked about how when you take the Iron Man trilogy, and that's like kind of a full story for Iron Man, and they kind of end Tony Stark's story at the end of that. Yeah. Like, you could watch those three movies outside of the context of anything else and feel like his story has ended.
Right.
If you take the Captain America trilogy that way, it really becomes like a tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a real interesting, like, I like that. Yeah. I'm saying this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, because the story becomes about, you know, the fall of Captain America, because the first movie is all about, you know, he'll give up everything just for his ideals. And then, you know, so the story, the overarching story is, well, where does that end?
Right.
And that ends, okay, so that ends with Bucky.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Like, he'll give up everything, you know, he needs family or whatever, you know, but he'll give up everything. Bucky's his one weakness.
Yep.
You know? And at the end of this movie, he's not Captain America anymore. You know, he gives up the shield. He gives up. He's on the run. Yeah, he's on the run. So
he's wanted.
I really like that. And it feels like a better story, you know, like if Iron Man just kind of went down with his Iron Man suit, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it'd almost be a little like, oh, man, you know. But there's, you like that feeling with Captain America, because it is, you know, he's so Cap and so perfect, and, you know, he's the superhero. You know, so where's his breaking point? You know, we want to, even though we don't necessarily want to see him broken, we want to know where his breaking point is.
Right, right. Yeah,
I mean, we want to see something happen.
Right.
That's what makes it interesting.
Yep.
I think the progression of the filmmaking aspect here also on the directing side, the Russo brothers, is fun to watch, because I don't remember specifically when they actually landed the Infinity War gig. I don't remember if it was before or after this, but you know, you talk about ensemble guys. You need people who can handle giant casts. And so you get these are guys who, they did a lot of work on Community.
Mm-hmm.
Big cast of important characters. They move next into, you know, Captain America 2, which technically is a Captain America movie, much like this one.
Yeah.
But it's bigger than that. I mean, there are a bunch of people in that. So it's kind of like, you know, sowing their oats as far as putting a bunch of people together.
Right.
And then you get, you know, Avengers 2.5 or Avengers Light or whatever it is. I mean, again, it's a Captain America movie, and they do a great job of focusing the story on him and still having all these other wildly important characters that all have their moment, you know? This easily could have become an Iron Man movie.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of conventional wisdom, a lot of Hollywood wisdom, a lot of directors probably would have been very tempted to focus on that. Tony gets his part. He's got a very large role in this movie, but this is always Steve's movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, which is terrific. And then what does that lead into? Now you get to Infinity War, which is like bringing together the first Avengers, which seemed like an impossible task that was handled
masterfully.
Right.
Now you're doing it again, even bigger, with an even bigger story, and you can watch these guys work up to that through going through the Captain America movies.
Yeah.
Which I think is very neat.
That is cool. Very cool. All right. Well, I think that's going to put a cap on... a cap.
Bah,
but put a cap in America on Civil War.
Are we going to give it a rating?
You got a rating for it?
Man, it gets 5-star Spangled Mans.
5-star Spangled Mans.
Have they have all the Captain Americas?
Yes.
I think so. I think all the Captain Americas have gotten 5-star Spangled Mans. They're very good.
Yeah.
They're all very good.
They're better than most movies.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. What's next on tap? We're in phase three now.
Yeah,
so
next up is Doctor Strange.
Is Doctor Strange next? And then Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
I think those are reversed.
Are they?
I think.
Either way, those are both coming.
Those are both next.
Those are both coming.
I think Doctor Strange is next. And where does Homecoming come in?
After Guardians 2.
Okay.
I think it's Strange, Guardians 2, Spider-Man Homecoming. Yeah. I don't know. We're on that
figure,
path.
Yeah. You guys probably know better than we do.
Watch Doctor Strange and Guardians 2, and you'll be caught up either way.
Either way. We're on top
of it. And, you know, one of them won't spoil the other if you do it in the wrong order.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
That's very true.
Post-credits on this one.
Yes.
I don't remember the mid one is dropping him off in Wakanda.
Bucky's back to sleep in
until
Wakanda.
He can get fixed.
Yep.
And then the very last one is your Spider-Man teaser.
Right.
Yeah. So. He's got his cool little spider symbol thing that he showed.
Yo, man, we forgot to bring that up. That little, the speech when Captain America and Spider-Man are fighting in the airport.
Yeah.
And the little banter they have going back. And they play it up here. It was great, too, because basically the post-credit sequence is Peter back home and he's nursing some bruises and Aunt May is going on about him getting into a fight. He's like, who was you going to fight with again? Some guy named Steve? Oh, is it that kid from such and such? Like, no, you don't know him. He's from Queens.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Or Brooklyn. He's from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
That's so great. And then they reveal that Tony's giving him the little spider signal, you know, on the thing. And then it just ends off with the Spider-Man will return.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Man, I love Spider-Man so much.
All right. Spider-Man will come home.
He will come home.
Because it's homecoming.
It is homecoming.
Yeah.
Back to the Marvel.
We get it.
Back
get
to
it.
Marvel. All right, guys. Well, hey, if you're watching this video on YouTube and you haven't already, hit that subscribe button, please. That way you stay up to date with all of our future episodes. If you're listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Podbean, follow us and rate us. Review us. We'd love that. And that way we can help spread the word on the show. And don't forget to also check out the Geek Easy podcast if you enjoy what we're doing here with the Marvel stuff. We always talk about the latest Marvel movies, Marvel news, as well as all kinds of other geek stuff on the main show. So definitely check it out. So I think that wraps it up. So until next time, guys, Marvel good, yay.
The Geek Easy podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of The Geek Easy Podcast.